Yes, we are, and welcome into another week here on Gwen and Chris. Monday edition of the program, 2:01 is the time. Chris, hello. Matt Scraby alongside here at the Odyssey Palace Studios, and of course, Tony Gwynn Jr. He's down at Petco Park where the Padres get ready to start their final homestand of the regular season. Can we already be here? The Houston Astros are in town tonight to start a key three-game series. Get to the Padres momentarily. But before that, I think Tony would agree that we should take a moment and thank friend of the show and congratulate friend of the show and Matt Scraby's best friend, Kevin O'Connell, for a phenomenal coaching performance yesterday.
Wonderful job. Wonderful job by
Kevin. No reaction from you over there?
I mean, we started the show with that.
I think
it was a good place to start, wasn't it?
Clap it up for your very best.
You're not gonna show any appreciation for your best buddy in the National Football League.
This is an actual thing. Tony, tell Dave that your microphone's a little wonky. Are you hearing that too, Chris?
He sounded a little sketchy.
He said my mic is a little wonky.
It is.
One of the channels is not working. What did he do?
You know what's funny is he was just testing my mic.
Oh, there we go.
And he does this like dolphin sound that he's like. Oh. He does that every time he tests it. So I thought it was good because he did that sound. He set it down.
Is it good.
I think it's better. Yeah, it's better now.
It's all fine now. Yes.
Okay. So about my best friend. Yeah, he did do a great job of.
Dave said he accidentally pressed the wrong button. So it had
no
nothing
worries.
To do with his,
no
his,
worries.
His sound checks.
All right. Anyway. Well, I'm joking, obviously. I wanted to see if Scraby would respond the way any good producer should, which is, you know, caring about the show more than himself. And if you cared more about the show than yourself, you would have played the applause
sounder
for Kevin O'Connell's performance.
You talk about how you and Kevin O'Connell are such good friends.
Well, he doesn't return my phone calls anymore. So.
The least you could... Let's be honest. He wasn't returning your phone calls ever.
He got on the show because he was returning my phone calls.
That was a little luck.
And then the Vikings PR staff... They stepped in. I keep getting this answer from the Vikings PR staff. Why don't you check in a little bit further down the road, and we'll see if we can make something happen. I'm like, this is the third time you've told me this.
Yeah,
like, we're further down the road. I don't know if we can get any further at this point.
Yeah. All right. I was watching football all weekend. That's what it sounds like. I was. So, Tony, how was the weekend in San Francisco? Did the Padres do anything?
I, too, watched football all weekend, but I also watched some baseball. And, the Padres went in there and just took care of business like we expected them to.
Yeah, they did a hell of a job. I want to thank the Giants for at least coming out and scoring a few runs on Sunday, but they couldn't get any Friday. They couldn't get any Saturday. And whatever concerns people have about the Padres' starting rotation was at least temporarily put to sleep after Dylan Cease dominated and then Joe Musgrove dominated even more than that. And then Martin Perez did pretty much more of the same yesterday. Padres sweep the Giants. It was an unbelievable weekend for the Padres. All things considered, they gained 2 games on the Dodgers. They gained 2 games on the Diamondbacks. They gained 2 games on the Mets. And they gained 1 game on the Braves. So
this has to be like one of the best,
right?
A 3-game span where the Padres have actually gained the most ground all season.
Oh, man, it was all went their way. And, as a result here with 2 weeks to go, the job is certainly not done. Nobody's going to even suggest that. But the Padres are sitting pretty now. They are 1.5 ahead of the Diamondbacks, first of all, for that home field. And they are a much, much more cozy 3.5 ahead of both the Mets and Braves for the final wild card spot. The Padres would have to get passed by both of those teams in the final 2 weeks of the season, and I would say that's unlikely. And then on the other side of it, you know, if you can keep playing well, look, the Dodgers are only 3.5 clear for the division, although I do caution Padre fans that are getting delusions of grandeur. Dodgers still have 7 games left against the Rockies. And
they have the easiest of the schedules of the remaining teams involved.
They do, but the Padres do get them for 3. So, you know, if you hang in there, you might still be able to put some pressure on the Dodgers, but you're going to need help from our friends in Colorado to make that happen. But, Tony, I don't know quite where to start. I think there's a lot of places to start for the weekend. Obviously, the starting pitching was, you know, unbelievable. Come on. It was was, you know, they didn't give up a run until the sixth inning yesterday. But I want to go to a couple of other ones. First of all, you know, Luis Arraez, two more hits yesterday. I thought he had the biggest hit of the game, frankly, in the 10th inning. It was a double. It set up the Padres getting that second run in the 10th inning, which is what they needed to, you know, stay clear of the Giants. He had a huge hit on Friday night, a two-out knock that made it 3-0 and set that victory into motion. I'm not going to even speak the word analytics, except to say that I just said it. But this guy he's just my favorite of all time. The other guys I want to just mention real quick, a couple of things that I think hopefully we can put to bed. Number one, this ridiculous notion that the Padres are somehow better when Fernando Tatis Jr. is not on the team. And another notion I would like to put to bed is, again, analytically based, I must say, it's the one that says Jake Cronenworth really doesn't cover a whole lot of ground playing second base. Because if you watched the game yesterday, the guy looked like a gold glover over there. And I thought the plays he made helped save that game in a lot of different ways. So, Tony, I'll let you take it from there.
I'm not even going to entertain the Fernando one because
Can I get in there for a second
No, you can't. You can't get in there. Absolutely not. Sorry. Especially if you're about to entertain
it. No, I'm not going to give any credence to it. I'm just saying that the record may have showed that there was something to it, but I never believed it is all I was going to say.
I should have let you in. I should have just stepped with my first thought and not even let you say that. Because
yeah,
it's so
fine.
Stupid that I can't even like wrap my mind around it.
Okay.
In terms of Jake, yeah, Jake, we know what the Padres have. They got a bunch of gamers.
Yeah.
Like, they just got a bunch of dudes that are gamers, that love baseball. And sometimes it ain't going to look the way we want it to look, but most of the time it gets the job done. And Jake is a good example of that. I thought this weekend was a great example of just a methodical baseball team that just did everything right. They made one mistake yesterday, or maybe it was the day before yesterday. The day Solano started it. It was Saturday, I believe it was.
The one that went off his glove for a double?
Went off his glove. They pretty much played flawless baseball all weekend long, and
yeah,
when they do that, they are extremely tough to beat, no matter who they're playing. It's the games that, you know, they played prior to this road trip, they pretty much played 500 balls since coming out of that heater that they were on, and in each of the losses, there was something that went wrong, and they would end up losing by one run in most of those games. All the rest of them that they won, they played perfect baseball. And they did that this weekend. And the one game they didn't, they still were able to overcome it because of the great starting pitching they got. And, yeah, man, there is a whole lot to like about this team. And I know it to be true because even way more – I don't know if I ever heard it in 22, but – and I told you guys this, and I heard it again this weekend. When we go to different places since the second half began, all of these – places we go to, guy, team, or the people up top, or the folks that we deal with in the media, are like,
right,
you guys got a legitimate chance to win a World Series. Like, that's how good this team has played for the entire second half, and it's just, you know, I think the San Diegans that have been here as long as I have, just enjoy the ride right now because this is as good of a team right now that I can remember. Maybe since 98, you know, going into a playoff. And now they haven't clinched it yet. There's still some work to be done, obviously. But this is setting up to be one of the better teams the Padres have had.
Well, Tony, you can at least tell us from your perch above the 20-game over 500 mark, because the last time the Padres were there was your team in 2010.
Yeah.
So it's got to feel pretty good to be 20 games over 500, which is what the Padres are right now. And, you know, again, you talk about the starting pitching. Combined this weekend, Cease Musgrove, even Martin Perez, 17 innings, 9 hits, 3 walks, 20 strikeouts, and 1 lone run on that I don't know how that ball went out of the ballpark, by the way. Donovan Walton, there must have been a breeze that came up there.
Oh, there was not just a breeze. It was howling out to
right.
Just
only
like it
way
was that, yesterday.
Yeah, that's the only way. But, look, the starting pitching, I will say this. If any team gets starting pitching like that, they're going to be impossible to beat. But the Padres have the chance to get starting pitching like that. Again, look, you didn't even see Michael King and you didn't even see Darvish in this series. That obviously sets the tone. Fernando yesterday coming off the bench. And I want to say another thing that is getting a little annoying to hear over the last few years. Tony, you bet you've heard it. Why does Fernando always swing at the first pitch? Well, that's why. Okay? I mean, he just lit up that pitch from Tyler Rogers. I get him confused. And just launched it out of there. You know, it was huge, obviously. And this team is good. They're good. I've been saying it all along. When it got down to crunch time Thursday, I said I wasn't worried because I think the Padres have the best club. And yes. I don't think anything different, obviously, after what I saw this weekend.
I did a deep dive on the Scraby Show in the off season about, or maybe in the beginning of the season, about Fernando swinging first pitch. And it completely changed my thought on it because Fernando swinging first pitch is much better than him not swinging at the first pitch. And I'm trying to get those numbers real quick. But,
well,
his career, he's 288 swinging at the first pitch, and he's 274 not. And he's had 200, let me see, where is it? Plate appearance, 800, he's like had almost 125 less at bats, and he's hit 49 home runs versus 75.
Yeah. Sometimes, and I know we need to do this because this is, you know, makes our show, but sometimes we just got to leave the professionals to do the professional stuff. You know what I'm saying? If Toddy wants to swing first pitch, let's let him swing first pitch because chances are none of us can do what he does. So let's just, you know, I think we got to kind of bag back sometime and just let the professionals do the professional thing.
I agree with you. I do.
He clearly, it's not just Toddy, by the way. First pitch in baseball at this point is a much higher average than a lot of the other counts outside of 2-0, 3-1, 1-0. It's the next best count to take a hack at. And, you know, in his case, it might be the only pitch that is a good one for him to attack in most situations. If he gets one later, likely it's a mistake. He's not supposed to get another good pitch to handle. So he takes his whacks at the first pitch. It doesn't work out all the time, but 28% of the time, 29% of the time it does. It's pretty good.
Yeah, it was a beautiful thing yesterday. It was just a jolt, and that's the kind of thing, again, this Padre team is capable of giving you.
Doesn't it feel like, I said this to Jesse, we said it on the air, the big dogs, it's like they know what time it is. They know it's time to strap it up, put the backpack on, and let's go. Because we've seen Manny come out. We've seen Toddy step it up. We've seen Bogey step it up. Jackson is in that group as well. So, again, let's let the professionals be the professionals.
Yeah, and the same thing goes for Arise. If he wants to swing at a pitch,
I left him out.
If the pitch is a little out of the strike zone, let him hit it. Just let him do what he's doing. He does it better than anybody in baseball, and I love this guy for it. So, Padres roll over the Giants. They are 20 games over 500. They're 85-65. They're a remarkably good 45-30 on the road. We are 150 games in. There are 12 to go.
This
starts
is a Kevin
tonight.
O'Connell clap.
Yeah, there we go, Kevin.
Do I sense...
you finally got your love. Kevin O'Connell out there, we finally got you the love you deserve.
Do I sense that Tony is extra spicy towards me today?
Do I sense this? Well, I'm going to just say this. He knows that he's probably not going to get a lot of Mondays to make fun of your 49ers, so he's going to probably take full advantage of it.
I don't think it's about that. I feel like there's something else going on.
Yeah, no, that's definitely not what got me onto this path, but the 49ers only just widened the path a little bit for me.
Let me just say, I am not someone who's going to be like, Fernando, you stink because you swing at the first pitch, because, again, I can't do it myself. I think more so, it's frustrating when someone swings at the first pitch and it's a quick out when you need runs and when you need base runners. Niners.
Let me ask you a question.
As a fan, it's
frustrating. Is it less frustrating to get 3-2 and do the same thing?
No, I guess not.
Okay.
It's all about me wanting the Padres to get base runners. Guy swings at the first pitch, quick out. I feel like the momentum of the inning's already dead, and I know this has nothing to do with actual baseball stuff. Let me just say that. This is how I feel when I'm watching the game at home. Chris, you come on. You got to feel a little bit of something like that.
I hate making an out on the first pitch or the fifth pitch.
Right.
I can't stand you.
I really do. I just thought yesterday was just it was a moment. You know, you have moments. There's been a ton of moments this year for the Padres. Profar's had a million of them. Merrill's had a million of them right on down the line. This is a 1-1 game where nobody's getting a hit. I think it was three hits apiece at that point. And a game's destined for extra innings. And they bring in this sidewinding guy who's throwing off the ground. And Fernando walks up and just swats one 400 feet into the stands. I loved it.
And I love that he did it.
So,
except he swung first pitch.
That wasn't my argument. I'm not going to ever do that again because the numbers proved me wrong. So.
Yes. Yeah. Well, the numbers,
stupid numbers. You guys,
the stupid
are
numbers,
me hate
because
numbers.
Because you brought up the fact. Well, the numbers still showed that they're better when he's
okay,
not
can
in
we
there.
Go back
so
to
stop
that for
saying
a second.
That. Just stop saying that. It's ridiculous.
No, because in the grand scheme
it's
of things,
it's ridiculous.
In the grand scheme of things, all that matters is wins and losses. And while Fernando sometimes, I don't believe this stat.
Bringing it up and
stop
giving it credence.
Stop regurgitating it then.
Because, okay. All right, fine. You're right. I'm done.
Good,
he says. What did I do?
Problem solved.
And this is the first day. Tony and I are together for the next 2 weeks. This is going to be
interesting.
Yes.
Chandler Rome from The Athletic covers the Astros. They're in town. They're always a fun team to talk about and go see. But these are big games, and we're going to talk with him in this hour. Plenty of football on the show. Of course, we will recap everything that happened over the weekend from college to the NFL. Good, bad, and ugly week two. NFL is in the 3 o'clock hour. Daily Gambit, Chris versus the fans, the Big Five. When we come back, we haven't mentioned it yet, so I'll be the one to do it. Is there one fly in the ointment right now for the Padres? There are some who think so. I think Tony and I will dispel
it. Don't look at the camera, Chris. Don't look at the camera.
Dispel it when we come back on Glenn and Chris.
2:24 on the clock. Tony Gwynn Jr., Chris Ello, Matthew Scraby. It's been a little spicy to begin the show, and I like spice. I'm not beating up on my head. It's not too hot. Chris mentioned fly in the ointment. Chris, what were you referring to there, buddy?
Well, a couple of swings of the bat that I think have, you know, concerned Padre fans. One was the grand slam off Robert Suarez. And then yesterday, the home run by Ramos to tie the game in the ninth inning. So what this means in the minds of, you know, fans, Robert Suarez has blown two of the last three save opportunities. He's given up 5 runs in his last 3 innings pitched. He's walked a couple. Anyway, I'm saying that's the fly in the ointment.
Word.
I'm saying it's not a biggie. I like what Mike Schilt said, which was it's baseball. The guy at the grand slam, that was a one-off. The home run.
They both were one-offs.
The home run yesterday, he threw it 100 miles an hour. That's the only way you can get a splash hit from a right-handed batter.
Was that really the first time that's
the
ever happened?
The first time it's ever happened.
That's crazy.
So that should tell you also what Tony just said. That's a one-off, too. Nobody hits a home run up to right field unless, you know, the guy hit a 100-mile-per-hour fastball. Here's my thing. The only thing, the Detroit game wasn't concerning, but he did walk, too. He struggled with his command in that game.
Bingo.
That was, you know, that's the only thing that would ever worry me about Suarez. As long as he's throwing strikes, getting ahead in the count, you know, it's baseball. We talked about this a million times. He was untouchable for 5 months of the season. Maybe Eric Gagne, the year he went 88 saves in a row or something, but it happens to every reliever. They're going to give up a home run. So I'm not concerned about Suarez at all. And guess what? Even if I were, I've got two guys that I feel pretty good about standing right next to him. So I don't think this is keeping anybody up at night except for some fans that are just looking for at least something to worry about.
Yeah, I know one guy that's keeping up at night. Matthew Scrape.
I knew it was about my tweet yesterday.
I saw this tweet, and it took everything in my power reply to the tweet. Mm-hmm. I almost sent it to our group chat, like, oh, this is what we're doing now? But I stopped myself.
Which
I stopped
one
myself.
Was
you know
it?
What? You know what? I'm going to save it for the show. And so I say all that to say I am not going to let people like Scraby and friends ruin, you know, the fun I'm having watching this team. I'm just not.
Yeah.
So you guys can worry about that if you want. I'll worry when Mike Schilt worries. And even then, as you said, Chris, there's options there. So I refuse in these last 2 weeks to let you guys steal my joy in watching this team.
Yeah.
So have at it. Ladies and gentlemen, you can worry about it all you want.
Those were the first two home runs he's given up since July 4th. So, you know, we might be panicking a little much.
I think it's kind of in our nature here in San Diego,
right?
To kind of look for whatever small thread we can pull on to.
Yeah.
How can this go wrong?
Yeah.
I'm not doing it. I'm not participating in 2024. I'm leaving to Matt Scraby.
Okay, I kind of knew this was the... He's turned his back on me. He's turned his back on me.
Hang on a second.
Oh, now Chris has turned his back on me. Now, I'm not this guy. All I did was post stats. And the more I thought about it, the more I was posting false stats. Because one grand slam messes up all of those stats.
Thank you.
All of
Thank
them.
Thank you.
So it doesn't.
It's not like putting a starting
thing.
Pitcher stats up there.
You're right. I after I posted, I thought about that. I was like, maybe I should have thought about that before I posted. But here's what many people replied with: he can't just throw the fastball. And before you come at me, I'm not saying this. I know that he's done it all year, but does he need a secondary pitch?
Are you kidding me? He has a secondary pitch.
Yes, I think he's thrown four different pitches this year.
Well, he does have a secondary pitch. They hit the fastball yesterday. They hit a fastball on the two home runs because they were both 3-2 pitches, and he didn't want to walk somebody. That's why you're not throwing a changeup in that spot. He does have another pitch. Look, Tony hit it. You hit it before you even turned it over to us. He got people out for 30-some-odd saves, 32 saves, using pretty much exclusive fastball. Nobody complained. Now, all of a sudden, everybody's worried about this. Mariano Rivera coughed up Game 7 of the World Series 1 year. You know.
By the way, that's a man who literally
had one pitch.
Threw one pitch
I'm assuming the talk shows that week were saying, I think it's time for Rivera to learn a new pitch. And Rivera was like, yeah, I'll take my pitch to the Hall of Fame as the only 100% vote getter. You know? Yeah. Tony's right, though. If Suarez, you know, for some reason can't get anybody out the next 2 weeks, which I don't think is going to happen, we've got plenty of options. So we're worried about something that we really don't know.
Here's the other thing you said. Had it looked like the outing against Detroit, I might feel a little differently.
Yeah.
But it didn't. He after the homer he gave up, he went through the next three guys pretty quickly.
Right.
And so the command, his issue will always be, if he's commanding the baseball, he's got a really, really good chance to close out the game. It's really outside of the Heliot Ramos splash hit, first time ever, I remind everybody, that he really, if he's commanding the baseball, it's pretty much been lights out. It's only when he's walked guys or put guys on via walk has he got himself in trouble.
It's the only thing that worries me is the potential of a walk, but he's walked 14 over 59 innings this year. So I don't think it's something to be terribly concerned about. And the fastball that he threw yesterday was a rarity in the sense, Tony, that he doesn't normally catch a lot of the plate with the fastball. You know, that one he caught a little more than he'd like to. But the guy, give the other major league hitter a little credit. He did something that no player ever has done.
Literally.
Right? So let's just at least give a little credit to the guy swinging the bat and not blame it 100% on, you know, Suarez.
You think of the right-handed hitters that went through that stadium there. Like,
yeah.
Maguire went there. Like, I mean, there's some dudes who can hit the ball a long way. No one's ever hit it in the water.
Sammy Sosa played there. Others.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it was a hell of a hit. And I think Tony's right, man. He bared right down, got the next three, kept in the ball game. You won the game.
I'm glad we got that out, though, because I knew there was something between Tony and I, and it was my dream
from
yesterday.
Now, it's all settled, Scrape. We can go back to our normal selves.
All right, cool.
but let's not, though. It's much more interesting this way.
Oh, yeah. When Tony, like, foreshadows at 1 p.m. that he has something he wants to talk to me about, and then I have to sit here for 90 minutes? Yeah, okay.
I don't have my iPad in front of me. Where are we going now?
We are going to be joined by Chandler Rome of The Athletic. He covers the Astros.
Chandler Rome covers the Astros, who are in town tonight. I'm currently watching them just finish up their early BP. There's some congregating amongst the Astros and Padres right now. So we'll get back to you on the other side. Talk some Astro-Padre matchup. Morgan and Chris.
Morgan and Chris.
All right, welcome back to Gwen and Chris. It really is something. I said it in the first segment. Tonight starts the final homestand of the regular season. I mean, we were just in Peoria, what, like 5 years ago. It seems like the season's been really long and really fast at the same time. So I don't know quite how to categorize it other than the fact that we have now hit 150 games. We got 12 to go. We get the Astros and White Sox. We go to L.A. for the Dodgers. We finish in Arizona. And the postseason is looking pretty good after the Padres swept the Giants and have a 3.5-game lead over both the Mets and Braves. If you're doing a little scoreboard watching tonight, the Mets are home to Washington this evening. The Braves are home still to the Dodgers. And the Diamondbacks are playing in Colorado. If you're going to root for any team the last 2 weeks beyond the Padres, it's going to be the Rockies because they got the Diamondbacks now and then 7 games against the Dodgers down the stretch. Nothing like casting your lot with the Rockies, huh, Tony? Hoping for some help from Dick Monfort's company.
I'm sorry, Tony. I'm sorry. I didn't do it on purpose.
He's probably saying great stuff again.
I know. You're there now. I'm sorry.
I was saying, you mentioned the Mets and Nationals, I was saying no Lindor, and then when none of you guys said anything, I was like, okay, he's killer guy.
Oh, that's right, Lindor, yes.
Down.
Lindor is hurt.
Not
that
plotted,
is not
but
good.
Potted.
Thank you.
Yeah, not good timing for the Mets to have Lindor get hurt.
Chris is trying his hardest just to move through everything going on in this room, in this area.
Yeah, Lindor's not in the lineup tonight. Did he not injure himself by just not sliding at second base? Was that the cause of the injury, or was it something else?
His back had been kind of bothering him before that might have irritated it more.
Yeah. Well, bad news for the Mets. Sean Manaea will pitch tonight for New York in that game. Dodgers beat the Braves last night only with a 7-run ninth inning against Raisel Iglesias, of all people, the closer for the Braves who'd been almost untouchable all year. So.
Get him out of there.
Yeah,
he's done. He's cooked.
He's done. Suarez and Iglesias both put him on the scrap heap. So anyway, those are the games to keep an eye on tonight as the Padres get set to host the Houston Astros. And we're going to have our guest here coming on from The Athletic. Talk a little Astros baseball, Chandler Rome. And I'm going to ask him, Tony, about this, but the Astros have been so linked to the controversy and the trash cans and the whole thing in the World Series. But, you know, one thing that I don't think have paid enough attention to, we paid a lot of attention to that. Chandler Rome is with us. Chandler, thanks so much for joining us as the Astros get set to take on the Padres tonight. And I was just saying, I think around the country, we still talk too much about what happened to the Astros in 2017 and the scandal. We haven't paid enough attention to the fact this team is now on a 7-year run of making at least to the championship series in the American League, 4 times World Series, 2-time champs. We should pay more attention to this franchise. They've really been amazing as you join us. How are you?
I'm doing well. How are you guys?
Good, thanks.
I mean, I don't know, like the dynasty word gets thrown out a lot, and they've only won, 2 championships in that span, one of which they illegally stole signs during the season. So I view them as a dynasty. I don't know if the rest of the sporting world does or wants to, but, you know, it's been unprecedented what they've been able to do.
I think you're not paying attention to baseball if you don't think consider this team a dynasty. They continue to get to the ALCS or deeper, seems like every year. Chandler, how have the nerves calmed in Houston? I know I was doing a lot of radio hits early, and it just seemed like everybody was losing their mind as, you know, the Astros tried to find their way with a new manager, some new pieces out there. But it seems like, as we like to say, water has found its level with the Astros. Has the city started to kind of calm down a little bit about this ball club?
Oh, the city doesn't care. The city's so focused on the Texans, they could care less. This is a football town that only cares about baseball in October, and the Texans have been so god awful for the last 4 or 5 years that they started caring about baseball, and they're. Expectations are just completely outsized. It's not a great baseball town from that aspect. So to be honest with you, like, no. Like, they haven't calmed down because everyone thinks every time they lose a game, it's the end of the world because it's a football. Yeah. They had that football mindset. But, I mean, as far as the team goes, you know, everything that could go wrong in April went wrong. I mean, their back three and their bullpen probably had some of the worst months of their careers collectively. They played a difficult schedule. And just guys were just late and not ready to go right out the gate. And I think certainly just water does rise to its own level. But you have to look at this division, too. The Mariners have to, since the All-Star break, I think only the White Sox have a worse record than the Mariners. They're in the worst division in baseball. And pretty much they just had to kind of get their muscle memory, kind of flip the switch. And look, they had to make some difficult decisions along the way. They cut Jose Abreu. With $30 million left on his contract. They cut Rafael Montero with a bunch of money left on his contract. They've had to make some difficult decisions, call some guys up. They made the big trade for Kikuchi. So it hasn't been without, you know, difficulties. But this team, it's just the same guys you see over and over again have just kind of risen to the level and kind of played like we're accustomed to see them play.
Chandler Rome covers the Astros for The Athletic. Astros Padres hooking up tonight in an old NL West division battle. I always like to think back to the days when the Astros were in our division. In fact, the first ever Padre game was played against the Astros, just for you people that care about such absurd tidbits. Joe Espada, the manager of the Astros. I know Tony kind of touched on it. We were all saying in April and May, the Astros, we knew they were going to be missing Dusty Baker. He was a pretty good calming force for that franchise. Joe Espada didn't know what he's doing yet. Looks like he knows what he's doing. All right. How's the season gone for Joe?
Yeah, it's almost like the players matter 10 times more than the manager in any situation. But look, I think Joe certainly had some first, I mean, this is his first time ever managing, period. So he was going to always have those pitfalls. The fact that they coincided with a 12-24 start, I mean, really kind of tested every kind of piece of his mettle. Going forward, he had a team meeting in Chicago after they got swept at Wrigley Field. They were going to Mexico City right from there. They were going to go play the Rockies, which I guess if you're going to have a team meeting, do it before you play the Rockies. you know, they were going, but the message was they were going to Mexico to play two against the Rockies in one of those. It was one of those showcase games where they were going to announce the whole team. They were going to have the opening day festivities, and they basically said, you know what, look. They're going to do the opening day festivities out there. Like, let's treat this as the start of our new season. Like, let's wipe 12-24 clean, and this is going to be the new start. And I believe they have the best record in baseball since that day. So, it has helped that Alex Bregman's hitting. It has helped that the pitching staff has really rounded into form. Hunter Brown has turned into one of the best starters in baseball that no one's talking about. Framber Valdez is pitching like an ace. The back end of his bullpen has really, you know, solidified and pitched like we know they're capable of. So I think that's all helped, but you can't overstate Joe's meaning here. You know, it would have been very easy for a first-year manager to lose that clubhouse or to lose just everything after starting 12-24, given what the expectations are for this team. And it's a credit to him that this thing has stayed afloat.
No doubt about it. First-year managers usually take a little bit to kind of get their feet under. It certainly seems like Joe has found that kind of level. Let's talk a little bit about, you talked about the back end of that bullpen, Josh Hader, who was formerly a Padre, got off to a little bit of a rocky start there in Houston, but he also has kind of gotten back to doing what we grew accustomed to seeing Josh Hader do, closing games out. How have you seen his kind of transition to a new team and kind of, you know, kind of fill in where, you know, it was a little difficult, it seemed like, at the beginning?
Yeah, he did not have a great beginning to his season. I think he blew 3 or 4 saves in April, and it wasn't just him. Ryan Pressly didn't have a great April. Brian Abreu didn't have a great April. But Hader has been everything they could have asked for and more, and when you're paying him $95 million, he has met that expectation. He is giving up more home runs this year than I believe he's ever given up in his career. A lot of the home runs he has given up have come at really inopportune times. It's kind of magnified some of the slip-ups. But, I mean, there was a string earlier this year where he had converted 27 consecutive saves. It has been dominance. And I think something, obviously, that you guys didn't see in San Diego that we're seeing in Houston is he has been willing to pitch more than one inning. He's gotten more than three. I don't have the number off the top of my head, but – I mean, look, Joe Espada has used him. They've really pushed him in games that they needed to win. And I'm not talking about in August. I'm talking about in May. In May and in June, when this team was teetering a little bit and they really needed to win to kind of right the ship, they were pushing him for 5 and 6 outs. He made that clear from the moment he signed the contract that he would be open to going back to getting 6 outs. And they've allowed him to do that. And, look, he's been everything they could have hoped for when they gave him that big deal.
Chandler, we appreciate it, and I know the Padre fans who are on their way to the game appreciate you reminding us of all of that so that we don't forget to boo him tonight when he comes into the game. Chandler Rome from The Athletic is our guest. I want to ask you about a guy that I just think is one of the greatest players in baseball. And I think when people say that about the Astros, for some reason Altuve comes to mind and Bregman, and there's a bunch of them, Verlander and on down the line. I think the guy that is the man, the Astros, in this world of Aaron Judge and Juan Soto and Shohei, is still Yordan Alvarez. Yeah. I don't want to face him, but I love to watch him slug. And he's doing it again this year. He's got 34. He's hit a 9.61 OPS. How underappreciated is this guy?
I don't know if he may be underappreciated on a national stage, certainly. Yeah. You know, in Houston, people love him in Houston. And in the American League West, they very much know who he is. You know, maybe it's because, you know, he can go on these streaks where he doesn't homer. But I think the thing about Alvarez that really doesn't get appreciated is how good of a pure hitter he is.
Yes, yes.
Like, everyone wants to talk about that he hits homers, and he does. He hits some massive home runs. He has 34 home runs, but the plate discipline he has, the pitch selection that he makes, the way he's able to do this. And look, I'm not comparing him to Aaron Judge in terms of not getting pitched to, but earlier in the season, like when Yiner Diaz still wasn't hitting and when their lineup, when Bregman was scuffling a little bit, like no one was pitching to him. And he's still finding ways to get on base to help this team. He's not, you know, losing his mind that he's not seeing anything to hit. He is as steady and as good of a hitter. And I had people tell me, you know, even when he just came up to the league, the international guys that got him for the Astros and people in the Astros org were like, look, the power is going to step out, but this is a hit tool first guy. The hit tool is over the power tool. And as crazy as that is, sounds, it's really borne out. It has manifested itself in his major league career. Yes, he's going to hit a ton of home runs, but the hit tool is something that I think is very underappreciated with Yordan Alvarez.
There's no doubt. And for those who haven't seen a lot of Yordan, you'll get a chance to see it tonight. I mean, he is as good of a hitter as we have in our league. Put the power aside, he handles the zone and the bat as well as anybody. One of the under-the-radar deals that the Astros pulled off, Chandler, was bringing in Kikuchi. I don't know that even the Astros expected to get the kind of performance they've gotten from him, but he's been a great pickup for this organization.
I mean, but it's between him and Michael Kopech, I think, for the most impactful trade deadline acquisition. Maybe Jack Flaherty, but I mean, he's pitched better than Jack Flaherty for the Dodgers. He has been sensational. The Astros have won every start he's made since his acquisition. They're 8-0 in games he has started. I'm sorry about the horns in the background. But
that's our crazy San Diego traffic again.
Love it. Love it. But look, they're 8-0 in games that Kikuchi has started. I talked to Scott Boris in Anaheim this weekend, and I thought he brought up a good point in that the Astros are allowing Kikuchi to go back to how he pitched really in Japan. He's a two-pitch guy now, fastball, slider, and they've worked with him on manipulating the shape of the slider a little bit, throwing his slider to back foot, back door locations to right-handed hitters, stuff he really wasn't doing in Toronto. They've basically told him to ditch his curveball. He's thrown his changeup more. I know everyone got excited. His first start, he threw about 20 changeups, and everyone thought that was the big fix. But no, I mean, it's been a more nuanced approach than that. He's elevating his fastball more than he did in Toronto. And I think, too, just there was a lot of outrage in Houston when the trade was made because of his ERA. I mean, he had a 7 ERA in his prior six starts before the deadline. But if you looked at the FIP, if you looked at the BABIP, if you looked at the underlying metrics, and you looked, even with that 7 ERA, he was still striking out 10 per 9. The stuff was always there. And I think they just kind of they thought that, look, the Blue Jays have one of the worst bullpens in baseball. It was pretty clear that the mood there was not great, that they were going nowhere fast. And I think, obviously, just a change of scenery, getting into a competitive, more competitive clubhouse with a better bullpen coming in to relieve him, I think it really has been a perfect fit from start to finish. And I think Kikuchi is certainly someone the Astros have to look at maybe putting in their plans for next year. He's a free agent after this year, and he is a Scott Boras client, and Scott Boras clients usually don't do extensions, but they need to really consider, you know, maybe giving him a couple extra years here, because he has been, you can tell he really likes it here. He's really assimilated well, and that's something he had struggled to do in both Seattle and Toronto. If you look at his first seasons in both Seattle and Toronto, they were not good, because from what I had heard, you know, he took a little time to get used to situations, took a little time to assimilate and ingratiate himself to, you know, American culture and different things like that. It has been seamless with the Astros, and I think that's something that you can't quantify, but it's certainly something that's helped them out.
Chandler Rome, great stuff. We really appreciate that, and funny too. We always love some good humor on the program. Enjoy the week in San Diego. Enjoy the series, and good luck to the Astros. Hopefully, we'll see you in the World Series also.
Thanks, Chandler.
Hopefully so. I'd love 6 more days in San Diego.
There you go. Appreciate it. From the Athletic, Chandler Rome, our guest. The Astros are indeed in town. Yeah. Go ahead, Tony.
See, real quick, that's to me is like the beauty of analytics, right? You can get a guy like Kikuchi. The analytics tell you, hey, man, you need to throw your fastball at the top of the zone, right? You need to ditch that weak breaking ball and use the slider more. And he's getting, that's the kind of production he's getting because of that extra information right there.
We can give analytics some credit for something for a change.
I don't know. Sure. What do the people at home think, Tony?
I don't know. When he started saying BAPIP and FIP and all that stuff,
FIP.
I don't know what that was, but it all worked out for the Astros, so good for them. More Gwen and Chris is coming up. Hour number two starts with a daily gambit and includes good, bad, and ugly week 2 of the NFL.